All right, I just want to thank everyone for being here this morning again and for finding the room. I know that I think part of APHA's policy is to try to get us to do as much exercise as possible in between each session. I'm going to be talking to you all about a study I did while I was a postdoc at the University of British Columbia up in Vancouver, Canada. And I was looking at the prevalence of intimate partner abuse and various complications during pregnancy. I want to acknowledge my co-authors from the University of South Florida, including Rob Lucio, who's hiding at the back of the room, as well as my postdoc advisor, Patricia Jansen, who couldn't be at the conference this year, and no relationships to disclose. So I'm just going to do a bit of a sell as to why we need to look at intimate partner abuse during pregnancy. I usually start all of my presentations this way, but it's nice to finally sort of be in a venue where I don't have to convince people that it's an issue. First of all, just by way of definition, I'm going to be talking about intimate partner abuse in sort of totality, so looking at psychological, physical, and sexual abuse. And as I said, I don't think I need to do much selling here that public. This is a serious public health concern. But nonetheless, just to get us up to speed and make sure we're talking about the same things, the WHO report on violence and health found that between 10% and 69% of women worldwide experience intimate partner abuse in their lifetime, and that's some pretty astounding statistics. I recently completed a meta-analytic review of over 250 articles published since 2000, in which we found that, on average, one in four women are reporting experiences of physical intimate partner abuse. When we broke this down in terms of lifetime and last year prevalence, we see that about more than a third of women are reporting experiences in their lifetime on average, and approximately one in five women are reporting physical abuse in the past year. Now, taking that into the context of pregnancy, obviously this is a very important developmental period for women and is seen as sort of an increased sort of sensitivity to experiences, both psychological and physical. Rates of intimate partner abuse range widely. It's an area of study that's emerged more recently than the larger focus on partner abuse, and we see rates anywhere from about 0.9 to 23% in the literature, and that's a fairly big difference. Some studies have found increased risk for partner abuse during pregnancy, and then other studies have actually found that this time is almost like a honeymoon period where there's decreased risk. And that's actually what we found in the present study, even though I'm not going to be talking about that specifically. Nonetheless, I think the important thing, and this is sort of what I keep saying when I go, and when I was working on my postdoc, I was in a mother and baby hospital, and I had to do a lot of selling that they should let me look at issues of abuse. And so the thing that I always came back to is that regardless of what number we see, whether it's 1% or it's 23%, these are still rates that are higher than most of the common pregnancy complications that we do a lot of work and routine screening around. So things like gestational diabetes or preeclampsia. I think another important thing here is that regardless of what the actual rate is, we know that it's associated with increased risk for adverse pregnancy and birth outcomes. But what we know in the literature is primarily focused on the impact of physical abuse. And as Dr. Coulter introduced earlier, I'm a psychologist, and so I always come back to what are the other types of experiences that women are having during this time frame, and how might that relate to physical health outcomes. So I think I alluded to one of the limitations already, but there's really been an overarching focus in the field of partner abuse during pregnancy on what happens when we see physical violence. And this is sort of for very obvious reasons, because it's quite easy to operationalize and to understand what the impact might be of a blow to the stomach, for example. But there's been a failure to differentiate between psychological, physical, and sexual violence during this time frame, even though we know from other literature that they frequently co-occur. So when there's psychological abuse during a woman's life, we also see higher rates of physical and sexual violence. This is important from a public health perspective for intervention, because the risk factors or the antecedents and the outcomes might differ significantly as a function of which type of abuse a woman is experiencing. The other criticism that we see in the literature is that there's a lot of research being done in practice, and there's limited use, and that's not a limitation per se, but there's limited use of well-validated instruments that allow us to disentangle these relationships and that really allow us to look at differences between the impact of minor and severe abuse. So for all of those reasons, as part of my postdoctoral work, I was interested in looking at the prevalence and complications of psychological, physical, and sexual abuse during pregnancy. We were looking to distinguish between minor and severe abuse, and we wanted to look at the unique and additive effects of different types of abuse during this time frame. So the sample for this study was 100 postpartum women. I'll run through their characteristics very quickly here. They were on average about 33 years of age. The babies were approximately 2 months old, I should say, at the time of the interview, and so important to distinguish here that these were fairly healthy women who had live births. The majority were Caucasian and well-educated, and 95 of the women were still in a relationship with the father of the baby. And now these statistics or characteristics are quite sort of comparable with the demographics of the site in which we were doing the research. And then finally, for about half of the women, this was not their first pregnancy and child. So I'm happy to debate about the conflict tactic scale later on, and there's lots of reasons why it is a good and not a good measure of violence, but we chose to use it in this study because it did allow us to disentangle experiences of psychological, physical, and sexual abuse, and also to create subscales for experiences of minor versus severe abuse. We modified the CTS for this study to query experiences during pregnancy specifically. So we looked at abuse over the lifetime in the past 12 months and during the pregnancy period specifically. For this questionnaire that was part of a much larger study, we created questions around the health status of the mother and baby at the time of the interview, as well as pregnancy complications and birth outcomes. And then we also included a brief questionnaire. So in terms of procedures, this was not a study advertising women who had been abused to come talk to us. We were doing a much larger study on women's health and well-being after pregnancy. And this was advertised in healthcare settings as well as throughout the community, so sites that would have been frequented by pregnant women or new mothers, including things like the rec center or yoga studios. We were trying to get a sort of really wide range of women to come talk to us about the various sort of issues they were having in terms of their health and well-being. Interviews were conducted by one of two of my graduate students at the time. They were both female who had their master's in psychology. And they were conducted at a location of a participant's choice or via telephone. Total interview length was approximately 45 minutes, and we were able to give them $20 for their participation. And then, of course, made referrals as necessary. So the first thing I'm going to talk about is just the prevalence of abuse during pregnancy. I'm not going to touch on the lifetime data or the past 12 months, but I'd be happy to chat afterwards about that. So I think the thing that was most astonishing to me is that 2/3 of the women reported some form of intimate partner abuse during their pregnancies. And this was just a fairly healthy community sample coming to talk to us, not about abuse, but just about how they were doing postpartum. The vast majority of those experiences were psychological abuse, and 68% experienced minor psychological abuse, and 12% experienced severe psychological abuse. Rates of physical abuse, 12% of the women indicated experiencing physical abuse during pregnancy, 12% were minor, and 2% were severe instances. And the same rates were found for sexual abuse. And it's important to note that these actually weren't the exact same women. So there was some overlap, but not completely, as I'll show you in the next slide. So here what I wanted to do is just break down what it looked like in terms of the numbers of types of abuse that they were experiencing. So that beige color, yellow-beige over there, is the third of women who did not report any intimate partner abuse during pregnancy. The big green, sort of half of the pie, is women who reported one type of abuse, and most of that was psychological. 12% reported two types of abuse, And 5% reported experiencing all three forms of abuse during pregnancy. I was also interested in looking at associations and the co-occurrence or shared variance between the different forms of abuse. And what we found here, which is slightly different than what we've seen in sort of more general population samples, is significant co-occurrence between physical and sexual abuse, but not psychological abuse. And so what we saw here, you can see the significant correlation there of 0.34. So that's actually a moderate significant correlation between physical and sexual abuse. And my hypothesis around the lack of association with psychological abuse is just the sheer number of women who reported that experience. I also wanted to look at the odds ratios here, and so I found that the occurrence of one of physical or sexual abuse was associated with an 8-fold increase of the likelihood of that other form. Now just to talk briefly about associations between abuse and pregnancy complications. First of all, prevalence of complications. They were relatively minor in nature. Again, this is a healthy sample of women living in the community. So 64 women reported some form of complication associated with their pregnancy or birth. I'll just give you a moment to look through here, from most to least common. Actually, the most common category was other. Some things in there are preterm delivery, 9 women, 8 women reported low birth rate, weight of their infant, infections during pregnancy, gestational diabetes, et cetera. So again, I think the interesting thing here is that the prevalence of abuse was much higher than the prevalence of pregnancy complications. I'm going to now run through the associations on a bivariate level between pregnancy, physical abuse, and psychological abuse, physical abuse, and sexual abuse. All the graphs are going to look the same, and in the interest of time, I'm going to flip it up, tell you what the association is, and move on. So don't worry too much about what the pictures look like. And this one, I'd be happy to chat with people later, but we actually found a decreased likelihood of infections during pregnancy associated with experiences of psychological abuse. And so I'm convinced this is a spurious relationship. I just have to figure out what the third variable is here. Now, for all of the other associations, they were in the direction that we anticipated. So the occurrence of physical or sexual abuse being associated with increased risk. For physical abuse, we saw increased risk of complications during pregnancy specifically, increased risk of having abnormal amniotic fluid levels, and increased risk of extreme nausea and vomiting. For sexual abuse, we saw even more significant associations. So here we saw increased risk of complications again, of extreme nausea and vomiting, of anemia, of preterm delivery. And then I think what you're starting to see is a pattern in terms of what behaviors or what outcomes, I should say, were associated with abuse. And something that I wanted to take sort of one step further was to think now of the women who experienced abuse, those who experienced more than one form, were those women at higher risk for pregnancy complications? And that is what we saw. So of women who experienced abuse, risk was heightened when there was a co-occurrence of abuse. So that was true for any pregnancy complications, for abnormal amniotic fluid levels, and for extreme nausea and vomiting. We also saw that for anemia. So by way of summary in terms of what I just went through, prevalence of abuse was really high, much higher than I anticipated actually, and I'm always the one sort of talking about why we need to look at abuse, but it was generally low in severity. But I think that's still important. I'm going to come back to that point in a minute. We saw significant associations or co-occurrence between physical and sexual, but not psychological abuse in this sample. And this is the point. So even when the abuse was minor in nature, we were seeing significant associations with adverse pregnancy outcomes. And we also saw differential associations by type of abuse, so that physical and sexual abuse seemed to be those experiences most associated with risk. And that the risk was increased further when there was a co-occurrence. And this makes complete sense in terms of thinking about the impact on women's health and well-being. Before I talk a bit about the implications, I do want to run through the limitations. So one important one here is that we were looking at self-report of abuse and complications. So of course, in future research, our goal is to do this again with collateral information as well as official reports. We had a small, relatively healthy sample from one geographic area. This was a pilot study that I got some funding for while I was doing my postdoc. So the idea would be then to use this data to justify to the feds that we need to continue this program of research. And something I think that was really important that I read recently in the literature is this idea that the women that we looked at in healthcare settings are by definition receiving healthcare. So it would be great and important to look at those women who are not receiving regular healthcare during pregnancy. This was retrospective reporting, though we did try to sort of limit the recall by looking at women within a 3-month window postpartum. And then finally, we looked at associations, and the size of the sample just simply does not allow us to get at the sort of more complicated associations that might be there. But the next step also is to, with a bigger sample, be able to look at the mediating, but also the moderating factors that are explaining why we're seeing the associations and why we're seeing the links between, say, sexual and psychological abuse and pregnancy outcomes. But I think the important message for me is that women's exposure to IPA during pregnancy is associated with adverse health outcomes, even in this relatively healthy sample. And for research, I think the distinction between the types of abuse is incredibly important in where this field needs to keep going, and also to examine risks once we see the co-occurrence. There's a lot of work done on bivariate relationships in the field, and we need to take it to the next step and get the sample that will allow us to look at the co-occurrence. In terms of policy and practice, I think the important thing here is that we need to look at multiple types of abuse, and this just simply doesn't happen. As part of this study, looked at the abuse assessment scale as a screening tool, and we actually found that it was a very poor predictor of both abuse as measured on the conflict tactic scale and also in terms of the outcomes, because it's only tapping into physical abuse during pregnancy. It does query sexual abuse in the past year and psychological abuse in lifetime, but it's missing what's going on in terms of those behaviors during the pregnancy period. And then in terms of intervention, I think the idea here is to focus in on when there's co-occurrence. And you'll see or you'll remember that the most significant and sort of the highest number of negative outcomes was associated with sexual abuse. And my hypothesis around that is that those are the women who are experiencing at least one other form of abuse as well. So sexual abuse rarely occurred in the absence of either physical or psychological abuse. And that's my contact information if you have any questions.